Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
A good conversation to have with him, as we have so far this season, a lot about wide receivers, obviously, and yeah. They continue to be the biggest storyline, as now Xavier Worthy was a full participant in practice. That seems like a very good sign for his chances to play on Sunday.
Well, it can't be a bad sign based on what it's been previous.
It's been limited, but I don't think I can say 100% he's going to play based on last week when everybody thought he was going to play as well. I would say it's a pretty good chance, though. So we'll talk about the wide receivers with Dane and Hughes. Also, Matt Verderam from Sports Illustrated going to join us during the Chiefs Red Half Hour today at 11:30. You guys can always interact with us on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. And of course, the video stream up and running as well. Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of the shows here on 96.5 The Fan.
I'm very happy that Worthy was a full participant. It also does make me think that at this point, there's almost no question that they sat in a meeting room and they said, we can beat the Giants without Xavier Worthy. Okay? Like, it's fine. We don't have to rush him back to take on Russell Wilson and Brian Daboll. We'll figure out a way to win that game. Let's make sure that Worthy is available and ready for the game against the Ravens. Because fundamentally, nothing's really changed in his injury.
Just time. Just time. And, without truly being there, I don't know. But I'm with you that now you get the payoff, which is a competitive advantage of only having three snaps on film in the year 2025 for Xavier Worthy. And I think you and I both agree their chances, of course, of winning this football game on Sunday go up significantly.
Absolutely.
If Xavier Worthy plays. Now, one thing that I had mentioned yesterday was, there's the national narrative around both these teams, despite being 1-2 and how nationally, and not even in Baltimore, because I was on in Baltimore this morning and they're actually picking the Chiefs to win and they're really, really concerned about their football team.
They're feeling down, huh?
They are. But they should be, just like we obviously know the concerns here in Kansas City. But nationally, and I saw another clip today from one of the national talking heads, discussing these two teams and acting as if the Chiefs are in way worse shape than Baltimore. And I don't get that. And you did some digging as well, Cody, on why that also is silly.
Well, I was thinking more about it because the way we were talking about it, I'm like, if anything, I feel like these teams should be talked about equally. Underperforming, one side of the football completely letting them down, real flaws and problems exposing themselves in the first 2 weeks, but also both teams are dealing with injury, like no Matabuke this weekend, which we can talk about its impact here in a little bit. They've had problems there, but in digging in the numbers, the Chiefs, I know points per game is going to throw this thing off a little bit, so you're going to have to bear with me because I understand that does matter. The fact that they're getting in the end zone does still matter. But the Chiefs' offense, in my opinion, is far, far, far closer to the Ravens' offense than the two defenses are from each other. So, for instance, Baltimore's averaging 330 yards a game. The Chiefs are averaging 315. They have 1 yard different in the passing attack. They have about 30, 40, 50 yards different. It's not even quite that much in the rushing yards difference. And most of that we can account for just having Derrick Henry. It feels like it should be more, considering they have Derrick Henry in a massive game in week two versus, and they also have Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes been running so much. So that's about the same. The only difference is points. On defense, however, so it's yards EPA per play, yards per play, yards per game. The Chiefs and the Ravens are all pretty much the same. The Ravens are better getting in the end zone. I won't take that away from them. That is what separates their two offenses. Not all the other stats, just simply points. On defense, they are 120 yards worse. They've given up 250 more passing yards. They've given up 150 more rushing yards. They're giving up 150 rushing yards per game. and are giving up a difference of, instead of 18 points per game for the Chiefs, 32 points per game. So like the same gap in the offense, except all the other underlying numbers are closer. All I'm saying is that in any given week, the point difference on offense and defense is about the same. Every other underlying number, Gold says that the Chiefs' offense is a lot closer to the Ravens' one than the other way around, than the defensive side. So the Ravens are in worse shape.
Yeah, it's not even so the numbers are interesting. For me, it's just long-term as well. The Ravens are pretty much roster-wise what they are. They may not get Madubuike back. They, you know, Kyle Van Noy probably hurt, not going to play on Sunday. The Chiefs know they're getting Rice back. They know they're getting Worthy back, and it looks like it's going to be this week. And so there is still holding out that this offense is going to improve. No matter what, it's going to improve. The question is to what extent. Like, we can debate what level the Chiefs' offense is going to eventually get to. Nobody knows that answer. We can speculate. One thing it is a fact, I think, is it will be better than what it is today. Like, there's no way it's not. There's just, and by the way, it may not be
correct.
Increase the way we all want it to increase. It may not jump them to a top five or top 10 offense.
But they're scoring three to four more points.
There's no way they're going to
be
just the exact same when Rice, Worthy are on the field at the same time, let alone if Hollywood Brown is still healthy as well. I think that's just reality. Whereas the Ravens, to me, what they are in terms of the personnel is their personnel. Now, it doesn't mean that they can't get better. Can they clean some things up? Sure. Is Derrick Henry going to keep fumbling every single game? Probably not. I don't think he's going to finish the season with 17 fumbles, right? Like, that's probably not happening. I would love for him to start the first 4 weeks with four fumbles, as in he fumbles on Sunday. That'd be awesome. But I don't think that'll continue. So some of this evens out. We had Ross Tucker on the show yesterday. Made a good point about looking back at the last couple seasons. The first month of the year, while you can dig yourself a hole, it still can tell us a lot of things that are not true. And cause freak out that's not real about football teams, or a team can look really good. Yep. That's not going to end up being really good. So we're still in that period of time. I do think these teams are very, very similar. Someone on the text line said overall they think the Ravens still have a better roster. And there's certain areas where I would totally agree with that. I would say, though, with their injuries right now, I don't know if it's clear cut as we make it out to be. Now the Chiefs are missing Rashee Rice, but in terms of overall roster, I actually don't think these teams are as separated. This goes back to the continued conversation from last year about how everybody perceived the Baltimore Ravens, where in every EPA stat and all these things in DVOA, the Ravens were the best team in football, but ultimately they didn't ever win big games. I would classify this Sunday as a big football game, as we have gone through.
Just like last week was for them with the Lions.
The narrative and the path that you go on is huge. Now, I will give Baltimore this. For them, if they lose, given their division right now, it still seems like their division would be far, far and away more in play than if the Chiefs lost a football game, just because the Chiefs have a team like the Chargers who probably are going to start 4-0 with three division wins. They play the Giants on Sunday. Whereas Baltimore, is anybody really buying into the Steelers? Cincinnati doesn't have a quarterback. Cleveland is terrible. They just have a great defense. And so you go through and you look at their division, they could start 1-3, and I can make a much stronger case that the Ravens could still win their division, in my opinion, than the Chiefs winning it at 1-3, only because the Chargers would be 4-0. So that part I will get. If you're saying the Ravens would be better positioned long-term, even with a loss from the Chiefs for the division race, yeah, I think that's just true. The math. In terms of actual football team, the Chiefs have way more room to grow, in my opinion, as a better football team as the year goes on than Baltimore.
I just think three games through the year, they've been better. They've been better than Baltimore. And that, look, I get it. It's like, ooh, wow, you're 1-2 teams better than our 1-2 team. All I'm pointing out is that, again, points per game scored versus, you know, the difference in that in points and points allowed per game are about the same, Gold. Like, the Chiefs give up way less points than the Ravens, and they score, technically, way less points than the Ravens score. But everything else points to something being a lot closer. To Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid's point, the underlying numbers, and Gold, we've said this with, I don't remember what this was, like hitting, right? Like, at some point, the underlying numbers pointing to the idea that they're getting closer doesn't hold weight. But after 3 weeks, it does, right? The fact that the numbers are telling you the Chiefs often should score more points and will score more points here going forward. So, like, I don't think that it's as far off from being at least a functional offense versus no stat. And what the Ravens are doing suggests they are anywhere close to being a functional defense. They have been horrible, horrible. And I know that they face Buffalo, one of the top scoring offenses in the league, and the Lions, one of the top scoring offenses in the league. Can I always point out that sometimes, like, I you know, like this is a conversation I think we got into last year a couple times with Drew, because they would say like, oh, you know, look at those offenses the Bengals are facing. No, at some point you're making offenses look good. And it's not just like the Lions don't score 40 against everybody. The Bills don't score 40 against everybody. They're scoring 40 against you. And so like the amount of points they've given up stands out. They're just better. Chiefs are better at overcoming a lot of their issues most of the time, too. That's why this year has been such a weird anomaly.
I keep saying it. I still think a lot of it is just the optics of when you watch the Ravens, when a team moves the ball as easily as they do and they score, you tend to think everything's fine. But I can tell you, talking to people in Baltimore this morning, they're very, very concerned. Like, so it's weird. As much as we're down on Kansas City right now and feeling like, oh, my gosh, can they survive this stretch? Their issue there, they're worried about their team, and they're not as confident that their team is just going to snap out of it defensively in the next week or two. Whereas I think in Kansas City, there's the real thought about, okay, when they get this guy back or that guy back, they'll be fine. That doesn't include the Juwan Taylor stuff, which we discussed yesterday, which you and I both are in agreement, which is Andy Reid, they're just being very, very loyal to Juwan Taylor at this point. That's the only explanation, or they don't think Jalen Moore is that good. It's one of the two. Either they're just being extremely loyal, or they don't think Jalen Moore's that good. I'm not buying the fact that, well, besides all the crucial penalties that are stalling out our drives at times, he's been really good. That's not a normal answer.
No.
For any other player.
No, it's not. And I just think it's that they've just decided that they like his pass blocking enough. I wish they'd just say it. We are willing to accept Juwan Taylor's amount of penalties for this. Because, like, I heard the same clips, like Jeff Schwartz. I think it was on the drive, or they played a clip from Jeff Schwartz on the drive where he's like, oh, Juwan can fix his problems. Can he? He's had 2-3 years to do it.
Right.
So that, maybe he can. That. As in, like, in a theoretical world, as in things can happen in time and space. Yes, Juwan Taylor can fix his problems. Will he? Absolutely not. He's made that point very clear. He is never, ever, ever going to change that.
This was Jeff Schwartz yesterday on the drive talking about Juwan Taylor's penalty issues.
He needs to line up on sides. It's like that. It's that simple. Because he's always been a good pass protector. You know, the negatives on him only are the penalties, right? It's like, look, you can tackle. You can do what wide receivers do. You can get in your stance and you can turn and point to the side judge or line judge and say, like, am I good? And if you do that a couple of times, you're pretty much going to be okay. If you line up too far back one time, they'll give you a warning, but you know, the penalties, like, you just have to stop it. Like, otherwise, he's fine. Otherwise, he's a big player. And, you know, there are lots of stats on, you know, what penalties do to stall offensive drives. And for so many years, the Chiefs' offense, it didn't matter. But now it matters, right? The margin of error has gone so small without the wide receivers. And maybe Thornton's helped with that a little bit last week. But, you know, first and 15, second and 15, like, they're not overcoming that at the rate they used to because the offense is not as good.
And that's Jeff Schwartz. He obviously played in the league and knows way more about offensive line play than anybody on this show or anybody at the station. It sounds like it should be correctable, but again, it's been 2 years.
He's willing to.
He needs to line up on sides. It's like that. It's that simple.
I know. Tell Juwan that.
And here we are, and yet it's been going on for 2 years.
His example, I think, actually is a legitimate one. Juwan, I don't know if the coaches have told him this and he just doesn't do it. Legitimately.
Yeah.
I would look to the line judge.
It sounds like laziness.
I would look to the line judge and be, hey, man, am I actually set? Because then I think even then, I think he also gets a break from the officials, though, right? Because if he's intent on, hey, I want to check my spot, I think the line judge they're less likely to call something. I think if he's saying, hey, am I good? I want to make sure that I'm straight here and ready to go, instead of just showing up and lining up and assuming that he's okay.
It is insane to think he's ever going to change this. He's unwilling. Like, this is not like speculative even at this point. Juwan Taylor is unwilling to fix this problem. He won't do it.
He should be playing then. I think it should be that simple.
He won't do it.
Fix it or don't play.
Well, he knows they won't bench him.
And it's on him.
He knows they won't bench him. And this is part of the underlying part for why I think he does it. Andy complimenting him on the pass blocking and all this other stuff. I think Juwan Taylor knows the little advantages he continues to give himself, the amount of time he needs that advantage. Yeah. He thinks that if he started lining up online and started getting beat, he would lose his job and that he would not be the same level of pass protector as he was before.
I think in general throughout his career, he's been a very good, you know, non-penalty offensive lineman, however you want to describe it, that Andy Reid was doing, right? The problem is now, and maybe it's the knee injury, I don't know, he hasn't the last 2 weeks been as good even take the penalties aside.
Last week was pretty rough.
That's the issue. But what Jeff Schwartz is saying, how it should be, it's that simple, it's correctable, that should frustrate everybody even more. Because if it is that simple and that correctable, then what's the issue? Are they not, you know, basically staying on him about it? Is it laziness that he was just not doing? Or it's what you're saying as well, which is like, he knows that he needs that advantage right now because of the knee injury. Either way, it's a problem, and one that continues to be shown every single week.
What's interesting is, like he also mentioned, there is no version of the offense right now that can take on much water because of the wide receivers. Scott Kaxmar had put out a stat yesterday. I think this came out at one point last year and now only stands out even more important, as we think Patrick Mahomes will get his number two wide receiver back this week in Xavier Worthy, who was a full participant. Did you see the stat yesterday from him?
Yeah, man, this is kind of crazy.
Number of games missed from the top two wide receivers. Injured or suspended, just your number one and your number two wide receiver are missing. It's pretty lopsided.
And this is not including tight ends, because I know you'll say Brady had Gronk, and obviously Mahomes has Kelsey. This is just talking wide receivers. Patrick Mahomes has already had 12 games in his career where he did not have his top two wide receivers. He's already had 12. For comparison, Tom Brady, obviously played for, 20 years or whatever, had three. And he didn't have a single top two receiver miss time until year 19. Now, we can get in the nitty-gritty of who his wide receivers were. I know if you're a Patriots fan, you're going to say, yeah,
Patriots,
but he never...
Patriots fans also tell me Edelman's a Hall of Famer, so you don't get to complain about
it. For sure.
Can't be both.
So there's some more digging in the stat you can do. Drew Brees, only two career games where he did not have his number one and number two wide receiver, and that did not happen until year 20.
That's
crazy. Aaron Rodgers only has played one career game without his number one, number two wide receiver. Peyton Manning did not have a single game in his career where he didn't have his top number one, number two.
Number one or two. Yep. In this case, both guys missing. That stat is crazy. Also, this goes back to the wide receiver thing, like maybe stop drafting guys who are oft injured or smaller wide receivers. You might be creating some of this problem yourself. But the idea that he's had to play 12 games and two this year without his number one, really three this year, if we're being honest, because this stat does not include game one,
but
in which Worthy had three plays of action. And then it doesn't include the game last year in which Rashee Rice was out after a quarter or whatever. So there are other moments in which he's been shorthanded, but 12 full games with no number one and no number two, well, yeah, no wonder it's been a little harder lately. Like, when you start getting down to, and this is, again, Tyquan Thornton's been a very good player, and we can talk about that, how that relates to Mahomes here in just a second. But, it makes everything harder when you're without your top two wide receivers. All of this speaks to, and this is why this game is so interesting. Chiefs are still missing weapons. Ravens are still missing weapons. They're both desperate. The Chiefs are at home. Like, I'm still surprised the Ravens are a favorite, considering they lost to Detroit. I don't see
but it goes back to the
big difference between the two, but yeah, some of it is that.
It goes back to, again, remember, like, Vegas sets a line, but also they're trying to get action on both sides, and so it's like, yes, Vegas thinks X is going to happen, but also it's what number they set to try to get the bets on a particular side or another side or whatever it may be. And so I think it's the national narrative that exists out there is leaning into that, because you're talking about the general public that's out there making bets as well, and they know where people are leaning. And if you look at any of the books this week, I think 75% of the bets are on the Baltimore Ravens. Not surprised to see that. It goes, once again, into exactly what we were just saying. I think what's interesting, and tomorrow we'll break down some other elements of the game. We'll talk more about Derrick Henry and Spags' history and everything. But basically, if we agree that blatant issues on defense for Baltimore, blatant issues on offense for Kansas City, two desperate teams, all this kind of stuff, games at Arrowhead. Well, then you're saying, is it coming down to coaching? And where's your confidence there? And I know we've had our issues this year in particular with how certain things have been handled on the Chiefs side of things. But who do you still trust in if we're talking coaching is really going to matter? A staff that has Steve Spagnuolo with the history he has against Baltimore, Andy Reid going up against Harbaugh, and a Baltimore staff that, I know it's a different OC, but just 2 years ago in the playoffs refused to run the football and got greedy and passed and all this, pass happy. Yep. Who do you trust more in a big spot? I still side with, despite all the discrepancies that you could point out and how the Chiefs have handled each game, I'll still say the coaching edge is clearly on Kansas City's side heading into this game. And if it's going to be a close game and all these things are true, well, then more advantage towards KC.
The other part is that I continue to, as we do with great quarterbacks, look for the development. You had mentioned with Mahomes, maybe it was just, hey, take him what you got right now because he's throwing it faster than he ever has in his NFL career. Well, another thing's coming back, and honestly, genuinely, a way more important thing as far as the next evolution of Mahomes needs to have the deep ball back in the offense again. And now that we're three games in, the numbers are starting to dictate gold that we are close to having that back. He'd mentioned his footwork in his press conference yesterday and the fact that teams are blitzing him more and how this is all going to open up, and that is opening up more things. As of today, Tyquan Thornton is the number one targeted deep threat in the entire NFL. Tyquan Thornton is the number one targeted deep threat, I'll say it again, in the entire NFL. And Mahomes is second in the NFL in efficiency on deep passes this season. Are we back? We back?
I won't go as far to say that. I mean, we all want to see it, but I don't think we can go and say it's just back and good to go now. I will say there's very promising signs. As we discuss even going to the Giants game, the one thing offensively they have been able to do each and every week, like there's been some weeks where you could say X player played well or they were able to do this. One thing that has been consistent through the first three games has been their ability, whether it's scheme, whether it's just, one-on-one coverage, Tyquan's going to burn past you. They have been able to have one or two opportunities where Tyquan is either wide open or making contested catch, because that was a great catch, of course, down at the one. And then, of course,
the play before he was open, he should have just hit him and he didn't have to make it hard.
So they have been able to get Tyquan Thornton open down the field. And yeah, Mahomes did speak yesterday, Cody, about his own footwork. It sounds like he's building a little more trust in his ability to stay in the pocket. Although the deep throw to Thornton that led to the touchdown was him scrambling to the right, rolling out to the right. But his feet have not been happy feet, as he always has said, and we've discussed before. So yeah, I think it's getting close. I'm not ready to say, oh, it's just all the way back, but that's the one thing they have been able to scheme open. So what happens when Worthy and Thornton are both on the field? Are they going to be able to come up with some new wrinkles where now teams are really going to be keeping an eye on Tyquan Thornton going down the field? Pick your poison. What are you going to do if you're a defense? That's the whole point. That's what you want to set up. And the Chiefs maybe on Sunday are going to have both those guys on the field. And I'm excited to see what that means happens.
It's got to be a tremendous sign that both Patrick Mahomes leads the NFL in how fast he's throwing the football, and also is throwing it the most to an individual player. They're not throwing it the most deep out of anyone in the NFL. What I'm saying is they're throwing it to at least one player deeper than anyone else in the NFL consistently. And so he's trying to adapt to something that we have been saying has been missing from the offense for 2 years. Two full years of no yards per attempt, no downfield passing game, and honestly, no deep passing game at all. And right now you're telling me he's the second most efficient player as far as expected points added on the deep ball, and that Tyquan Thornton is the most targeted deep threat in the NFL right now? Hell yeah. That gives me, and they're doing it without, to your point, Worthy and Rashee Rice to help distract to anything underneath. They're able to do that while that's the case. And also, even though I don't think that the offensive line has played perfect, I also think that it makes sense that it's also encouraging to me that he's been able to do that without a perfect offensive line three games into the season. That if we've mentioned before, Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith play better gold, maybe there's even more opportunity to make this work and sign in. And so all to be said, I just think that when we start looking at it, they're in much better shape than they've been in a long time as far as the deep passing game. I'm almost about to believe that they've got it again. What? That the touch is back.
You would think that based on how the Ravens secondary has looked, they should be able to take advantage of that again. The Ravens pass defense
been pretty bad.
Stinks. They're like 31st in the league in pass defense. They're 30th in run defense as well, but we know that the Chiefs don't run the ball enough. They should be able to take advantage of it, but
more advantage now that they got Worthy back.
Exactly.
For sure. That's why that injury is so huge.
Exactly. Yeah. Him added there because Jaire Alexander hasn't looked the same since he's been signed.
He hasn't played much though. I don't think he even played last week, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, probably maybe because he got cooked in the Bills game a little bit. But Marlon Humphrey has always been one of those guys. I think people think he's better than he actually is.
Interesting. I love Kyle Hamilton. To me, is a stud.
Yeah, Kyle Hamilton's a safety though. He's great.
I'm just talking about their secondary. Like I think he's legit. There's no overhyping him.
Yeah, Kyle Hamilton's really good. I mean, they also haven't gotten as much out of Malachi Starks as maybe they would have thought. The new safety out of Georgia that I think was a really good pick at the time. Is Kyle Van Noy playing? Because Kyle Van Noy was out too last week.
He's questionable, I think. I don't know.
Zane Likely's a limited participant. Kyle Van Noy's questionable, and Matabuke
Likely hasn't
out.
Played all year, so we'll see if he's... I think the whole point was to try
if
to get him
if he's playing,
ready.
We know he's wearing white shoes, right? There's no way he's not after what happened last year.
Maybe.
Like, I mean, I would think so.
If he doesn't, then it's his, and it and then it's his own fault.
That's another thing, too. I think, Cody, because you brought up the offensive line real quick before we go to break. They didn't they didn't sack Jared Goff once on Monday, and I know that the Lions' offensive line is one of the best in football, but... Going into this matchup, like the importance in going along with what Jeff Schwartz said too, avoiding the first and 15, second and 10 stuff, avoiding that is maybe the biggest key in terms of getting the offense going. And then potentially, of course, the deep ball as well with the run game and balancing it out a little bit more.
All right, we're just getting started here on a Thursday. Up next, a wide open race in one element of college football. And one move that Cody thinks the Royals should already be considering for the 2026 season.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That's next. 30 minutes away from talking to our guy, Danen Hughes. We'll get his perspective on the Chiefs wide receiver room. Also, what he makes of that Ravens offense and how tight is this matchup going to be on Sunday afternoon right here on 96.5 The Fan. Of course, coverage begins 3 hours before kickoff. Josh Briscoe, pregame coverage. Then, of course, Mitch Holthus, Danen Hughes, Josh Klingler, and then postgame with Josh Briscoe, all right here on your home for the Chiefs. 96.5 The Fan. We will get back to football in just a second, but briefly, let's pivot to the Royals. Obviously, 2 days ago, they were officially eliminated. We talked to Vern about a couple of the moves in the future and maybe some of the decisions that they have to make in the future. You were thinking more about Carter Jensen, what you've seen, and how that should impact 2026.
Well, like, it's easy to see kind of how they're going to handle pitching. FanSided did an entire article out about the biggest winners at the trade deadline. And despite the fact the Royals will not make the playoffs, they got the second most WAR out of their trade deadline assets, including Adam Frazier, by the way.
But I thought,
as a part of it,
I thought Cam Devaney was going to be the savior, and that was a terrible trade at the time.
Can we do something tomorrow? Can we spend 5 minutes and I'll break down for you what Cam Devaney's season looked like this year for the Pirates?
That's too many minutes.
Hold on, wait.
You want to dedicate 5 minutes?
3 minutes?
30 seconds. 30 seconds.
Just so. What? But no, it's actually not about Cam Devaney. And it's more about learning a lesson together. For anybody who texted into this show.
Lesson for today?
It can be. But like, you know, who needs a lesson learned? In fairness, I had a lesson planned for today and I had to move it to tomorrow because I forgot all my visual aids. I had visual aids.
Well, you can't expect your students to show up a different day. It's the professor's fault. I think you have to wait till next week.
Fine, I'll wait till next week. The point is, there are visual aids. But can we do a quick lesson, almost like an online discussion board, if you will, Drew, just to learn the lesson that is, if you came on this show and complained on the text line about Cam Devaney, called into the show complaining about Cam Devaney, went to social media to complain about it, we can avoid this kind of reaction the next time. Besides that,
all right,
let's talk about Carter Jensen. The Royals, in the J.J. Piccolo era of general management, which is the only era that matters for this purpose, has spent a ton of time and resources trying to figure out, Gold, how to have a leadoff hitter in front of the three guys they know can hit. Vinny Pasquantino, Salvador Perez, and Bobby Wood Jr. are stars and can hit, and they know that, and they have been trying to figure out ways to do it. They were willing to trade away a middle of the rotation starter and Brady Singer to try to bring in Jonathan India. They tried Mikel Garcia in the leadoff spot at times last year. They've mixed and matched and moved and all this other stuff. Just let Carter Jensen hit leadoff. I think it's pretty clear, even in just the 30 games and his entire minor league career, because Cag's problems and the things that he's shown were also things he did in the minor leagues. Carter Jensen's going to get on base. If there is one thing we know for sure about Carter Jensen, he's going to get on base, and he's going to get on base frequently. He has a great idea of the zone. And if the whole point of Jonathan India was not he hits for a tremendous amount of power or he hits for a tremendous average, but he very simply, like Moneyball, gets on base in front of the other guys, well, let's have Carter Jensen hit leadoff, have Bobby hit second, Vinny third, and then you can make your decisions. Mikel fourth, Salvi fifth is probably the order I would do it in. But depending on how you want to structure it, get Carter Jensen ahead of the other guys and start it now. Start tinkering. Four games didn't help you. Start at game one of 162 next year.
It could get to that point. I don't know if that's how it's going to start the season in 2026, if they're going to open up that way. I mean, we are still talking about a 16-game sample size for Carter Jensen. Like, just put that in perspective. It is still just 16 games.
Oh, it's very small.
And I love what I've seen. I don't disagree. I don't know if they're willing to do it. Also, if we just had J.J. Piccolo on the show Tuesday, and things can change in the offseason. But he essentially was saying that they view Carter Jensen having the same type of role as Freddie Freeman had.
I'd like a bigger role than Freddie Freeman's role.
He acknowledged that that's kind of what they're thinking now. Now, maybe it changes, but I'm going into 2026 assuming that it'll be similar playing time.
Going to be like 100 games for Freddie Freeman.
There's a real chance. It also depends also what Salvador Perez is doing, because if you're going to do what you're saying, is that means he has to DH, and then you start figuring, okay, well, then where's everybody else filling in? Because hopefully Jack Caglione is your right fielder, but we'll see. Vinny obviously is first base. They can play DH occasionally if they need to. Salvador Perez, we've all agreed that he should not be behind the dish every single time. So, okay, I get you could lead him off as a catcher as well, obviously, but like how many games are they not going to have Salvador Perez catch and have Carter Jensen catch? They really haven't had Carter Jensen catch much yet in this 16 games.
Salvador Perez was more on pace for like 125 to 130 games caught until they traded Freddie Fermin, and then that number skyrocketed. Look, I could be talked into the flip. Yeah. Mikel Garcia, to Vern's point yesterday, is hitting 350 in the leadoff spot. You want to tell me it's Mikel Garcia leading off?
Go back to him. That's fun.
And then
start the season that way.
And then Carter Jensen too? And then Salvi, Vinny, or not in that order. It'd be Bobby, Vinny, Salvi. I'm okay. Salvi can move down one spot in the order. It's not throwing anything off. Then what a luxury. Now all of a sudden, some of these other guys, Kyle Isbell, Jonathan Indian, Michael Massey in a timeshare, they're in seventh or eighth for your team. That's a real comfortable spot, I think, for Jonathan India, where you notice less the contribution he's been adding to your team offensively. His numbers this year, they play as a 7 or 8 hitter, Gold. Nobody's complaining about his numbers this year. If he's the 8th hitter, this is going to go down as one of the biggest regrets they had this year was how long they let Jonathan India try to hit leadoff. And I'm not saying they'd go back to that next year. I think they've moved past that moment. But Carter Jensen gets on base. That's the only quality they've openly admitted to wanting in a leadoff hitter is getting on base. So put him on base.
Yeah, I think he will. But again, we're talking about 16 games. And is 16 games enough to make that bold of a decision? I think there's a chance that it takes into the season to do it. Now, the argument, I hear what you're saying, is how long are you willing to wait? They waited too long, clearly, to move on from Jonathan India in the leadoff spot. And he of course, did not have a very good season, to say the least, in that trade that they made with the Cincinnati Reds. I don't know if it's something they have to do on opening day. Let's see how spring training goes as well. We have plenty of time for this conversation about worrying how the lineup's going to be constructed in 2026, but Carter Jensen has definitely given you reasons to consider. That's the good news, even in the 16 games.
I think part of the reason I'm bringing this up now is I was thinking more about it yesterday because Vern had mentioned that this offense is pretty much this offense. The way he sounded like he expected it was, maybe they bring in a platoon left fielder, maybe not. Maybe they bring in a platoon center fielder, maybe not. So the offense is the offense. So now I'm like, okay, well, then how can I get more runs out of this unit? How can I squeeze more juice out of this, right? Where do I add runs? And the simple solution is put people on base in front of the run producers. Like, Vinny is a 100 RBI guy 2 seasons in a row. I know he came up short last year, but for all purposes of this conversation, he's pretty much established himself as he's a 100 RBI guy. Bobby Wood Jr. is on average 100 RBI guy over the last 2 years. He's going to come about 10 short this year. And then Salvador Perez had second most doubles he's had in his career, second most home runs he's had in his career. So, like, he's still got some juice left in the hitting department, too. Just, this was always been their plan. I just think it is an unwillingness. It's kind of like the football end of this. It's an unwillingness because of how it went with Cags this year, or how it goes with young players a lot of times, to just say Carter Jensen, as you've pointed out, 16 games into his career is hits in the 2 spot. Like, eh. But if it's a way to make it work, it doesn't have to stay forever. If it's going bad after a week and a half, 2 weeks, you can adjust quicker than you did last year with Jonathan India. That's all. You don't have to stick with it for 60 days. No one makes you.
It'll be a convo during spring training. And so much also is dependent on what moves do they make. But if they only just kind of do what Vern is saying, they're likely to do in the offseason, you know my concern there. It's just that you're truly just banking on some guys that had some bad years recovering.
Another guy's good years not going back.
Yeah, and that's a risky proposition. And it's not that I don't believe in Michael Garcia. It's just, is he going to have career year type numbers again? I mean, that's just, even if you were, this was the issue this year. Bobby Wood Jr. did not have a bad season at all, but he had slight regression from an all-time season. And that, along with some regression from three other players, and then your left and right fielder being a disaster and not even on the roster,
awful.
You know, then you ended up being in the spot you're in. So you're banking on Michael virtually being about the same player next year. Salvador Perez, Father Time did not get him this year. But no, you're banking on it not getting them next year. You're banking on Vinny. You know what I mean? Like, there's certain things that I'm not as concerned about. Bobby and Vinny, to me, I can lock them in. Michael, I think I know what I'm getting, but I don't know if I can lock in the exact type of season that he had this year.
But you might get more out of Bobby. I think that might be the inverse.
Well, then where's your balance?
A little less out of Michael, but I think they might get a little more statistically out of Bobby Wood Jr. I'm just looking for ways to find offense. Look, the simple solution is Carter Jensen and Jack Caglione rake.
Sure.
And then offensive problem solved.
I mean, I think part of the solution next year and that they're going to be banking on, if they're not going to go and make any acquisition, is going to be that Caglione figures it out. Carter Jensen continues to get better. And there you go. There's two new offensive pieces for a full 162 that are going to fix some of these issues. It can happen. I'm just saying there's definitely some heavy risk in just going with that and waiting to the deadline again to try to acquire offense.
They do also still have a massive lineup imbalance. Wow, which, you know, we could, I mean, I don't know, maybe that's a problem for a different day, but they do have an issue with when a lefty starts on the mound against the Royals. Let's just say, based on the lineup as it currently sits, what the hell do you do? Your whole lineup is left-handed. Like, you can't go into every week and be like, well, every time they start a lefty, it's going to be Tyler Tolbert and Adam Frazier. And you're like, is there other ways to do this? Or, like, can we negotiate this in some other way? They do still have an issue there, but that's also, I don't imagine any left fielder they would hypothetically bring in as a platoon guy wouldn't be right-handed. So I guess some of those problems solve themselves.
You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game all season long, kicking off with the Week 4 matchup, of course, on Sunday between the Ravens and the Chiefs. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Let's talk a little college football, and then Dane and Hughes are going to join us in 20 minutes or so. The Heisman race is fascinating this year. This is the most wide open Heisman race we've had in a while. Last year, I know there was some debate between Ashton Gentry and Travis Hunter, but Travis Hunter was kind of the front runner for much of the season.
Yeah.
And he ended up winning the Heisman. There's some names that I'm sure 90% of the audience doesn't even know. And nor should you.
Okay, we can start with me. I'm a great casual guest.
Do you know
quarterback is at Indiana? He's the favorite.
I mean, listen to that sentence.
I know.
There's no chance.
He's probably going to go in the top 10 of the draft or the top of the first round of the draft this year.
Yeah.
The way things are going. Fernando Mendoza.
He is now the favorite at +850 to win the Heisman. Now, I do not think he ultimately is going to win the Heisman, if you're just asking me. He once was 35-1, as in last week. But because of Mateer's injury,
they also throttled Illinois 63-10.
They did. But here's the only problem. So
Illinois were top 10.
Three of Indiana's four opponents, Old Dominion, Kennesaw State, and Indiana State, hadn't played anybody. Finally, Illinois was a real test. And obviously he performed very well. I would not put money on the favorite is all I'm saying. He'll be in the mix, but I wouldn't put money. Then you have some other names on top of the list. Carson Beck. You've heard that name.
Yes.
Okay. He's at Miami
because
now.
He obviously was one of the bigger quarterback guys coming out of Georgia.
He has the second best odds at 11-1, along with Dante Moore at Oregon. And then you've heard of Jeremiah Smith, wide receiver, Ohio State. He's 11-1.
Hard not to hear from him. He's
Marcel Reed, Gunnar Stockton, also Joey Aguilar, right there around 14-1. And then Josh Hoover, to me, he's the interesting name. Josh Hoover at TCU, 15-1. And then Garrett Nussmeier, you've heard of at LSU. If I were to put new bets on players right now, Hoover was 50-1 last week. So unfortunately, we missed the real opportunity. But still, he's 15-1, 18-1 right now. He's the TCU quarterback. He's been very impressive. They also have not been against cupcakes. Three games, 1,000 yards, 11 touchdowns, two picks. And he's averaging 9.7 yards per attempt against SMU, 379 yards in five touchdowns. To me, he's the bet to make right now. It doesn't mean he'll win it, but he's a value play, I think, that you can still get there at 15-1. It's just crazy how wide open this is. I mean, you got guys
Has
that
Indiana
are...
Has Indiana ever had a Heisman Trophy
no.
winner? I mean, I'm just assuming.
You got guys so. Way down the board that are still... Haynes King, the Georgia Tech quarterback, 25-1. Bo Pribula at Missouri, 30-1. It's so wide open, you can't even say he doesn't have a shot at this point in time.
No, because they've won back-to-back. If they win, like, their next two games against ranked SEC opponents... I would think his odds would be closer to 10 to 15 to 1, wouldn't they?
I'm so surprised Ahmad Hardy is not higher than 60 to
Running
1,
back.
60.
How's he not? 50 to 1 at FanDuel right now.
60 to 1 at DraftKings right now.
Yeah.
Is that not a bet I should make? Like, I'm just, yes. Running backs no. win yeah. the Heisman yes. all it's the time. That's open. Not like uncommon.
Yes. Yeah, it's so wide.
You should bet that.
It's so wide open. There's not a clear cut quarterback this year, so it opens the door for a running back. And obviously, we've had running backs win the Heisman, but
he is on pace to have a season as good as Ashton Jeanty against SEC opponents. That's the pace that he's on.
Is this just like a mediocre year as far as team dominance in college football? Is that adding to this?
It's still
is it
early
just not elite level quarterbacks at elite level programs?
I think it's adding just to it, this? It's the way that the I think you're onto something. And just the way that the season is. I think going into this year, it feels like the national title is more wide open. Like even because people. Myself, I picked Clemson. Not going to happen. Yeah. A lot of people picked Penn State. You could have picked Ohio State, Penn State.
Like
there's a variety of teams that are in the mix now, and it seems to be this way, at least over the last couple of seasons, just in terms of teams that are surprising, that have players that nobody thought of who are actually playing at a significantly high level. Like Fernando Mendoza was hyped up to be really good, but nobody thought he'd be a Heisman Trophy top odd candidate, I guess.
So if I gave you guys each, you know, $100 to make two or three bets, who are the quarterbacks you put, or the quarterbacks?
What would be Hardy? 50-1, I would just
Hardy
take my
would
chances.
Be one. I told you about Josh
That's
Hoover. Josh Hoover would be the other one. And then just because you want to, you know, be in play with it, I do think with what Miami has done, Carson Beck at 11-1. So I would probably I would want a ticket on Hardy, Hoover, and Beck. Those would be the three I would lay bets on.
We'd have two the same. I'd have Beck and Hardy. I'd probably just go like Drew Aller or Gunnar Stock. One of the teams I think.
Well, Drew Aller's is 25-1.
Yeah, it'd probably be that. Just knowing that Penn State can win a lot of football games. He looks really good in one big game.
They play Oregon this weekend.
He could take a good size jump relatively
Someone said
quickly.
They would put money on Jalen Daniels. That's from the text line. Obviously, Kansas quarterback.
I mean, they got to win the Big 12 and be one loss.
He's at 70-1 on DraftKings right now.
Yeah. That's tough. That's tough.
I would bet Hardy as well. I would also bet Jaden Maiava from USC.
Okay.
He's got over 1,300 yards already through four games. He's on a monster pace to have a good season. And USC's schedule is actually relatively nice going forward. So I think he could be a guy. I also think this is an interesting name. We haven't mentioned him that much. Thomas Castellanos from Florida State.
Oh, the Boston College transfer?
Yeah, obviously Florida State is right back in the fold of being a top-tier team right after the 2-10 season. Going, they got Miami next week. That might be the game in which a Heisman moment could happen, either for Carson Beck or for Thomas Castellanos, where whoever wins that game and whichever quarterback plays better, all of a sudden the odds might shift again after next weekend.
I think we're probably going to see, to your point, Cole, a lot of movement in this over the next few weeks because it's going to be game to game on who plays better, like who has a couple of big games. Again, I think
this is where
the reason why I like Hardy is they have massive games against massive opponents, as in like opponents people know. If 2 weeks from now or 3 weeks, because they got a bye week, maybe it's three, whatever it is, whenever they got Alabama, it's like mid-October.
2 weeks or 3 weeks from now.
Because they got a bye week before
this
UMass.
Week, bye week, okay. Alabama.
So 3 weeks from now when they take on Alabama, if Hardy or Pribula go off against Bama, like that's gonna, like in Columbia, that's gonna skyrocket. But
no, I know what you're
they're
saying.
Not gonna be 50-1.
Nope. People will be 60-1
anymore.
People will be more aware of Missouri.
Yeah.
In
general. I think this is a good week before the weekend starts. Like if you don't have any Heisman bets yet, this is a good week to start, you know, sprinkling on a few guys. It's so open that you can go ahead and maybe take some guys that have good value. Again, we only have one player that is shorter than 10-1 to win it, and that's Mendoza. So that tells you how open it is, and there's some opportunity. I'm not saying that only bet on guys that are 50-1. The chances of, as much as I agree with you that Hardy should have better odds, like the chances of him winning are still fairly small. But at 50-1, though, you're like, okay, in a year where it's so wide open, why not take a few sprinkles on a long shot? So Heisman odds are fun to look at right now. It is very much anybody's.
I
here to win.
I was about to say, I picked Penn State to win before the season started.
Gold picked
Ohio State. I wouldn't change those.
Yeah, I'm not changing based Ohio
on what's
State.
Taken place so far. Who would your new selection be, Drew, to win the national champion now that your team's eliminated? 3 weeks in, and it ain't going to be Clemson.
No.
I think Penn State probably is who I would, because I've got Penn State in the national title game. I'm playing Clemson. I think Penn State. Right. Penn State's just, if James Franklin doesn't win a title with this group, he's never winning one at Penn State. The roster is just completely loaded. Are you going to watch the Penn State game this weekend now that you're talking about Drew Aller? Because you know what this weekend is, Cody, correct?
Loaded college football slate.
They play number 6 Oregon. It's the whiteout night game against Oregon. They've never been in a whiteout night game.
Someone check on Drew. No blue chew needed for him.
Mo Bamba is going to be blasting at the beginning of the game. It's maybe the best environment in college football.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. There's some great college games. USC, Illinois, ridiculous. Top 25 matchup. LSU Ole Miss. I mean,
Washington's the one team that nobody's talking about. They're second in the country in offense. The line's been cut in half. I think it started at 14.5. It's at 7.5 now.
Yeah. Sometimes it's
and
tough.
It's in Seattle.
LSU Ole Miss, though, is huge. Yep. Auburn A&M's. I know Auburn just lost, but still Auburn A&M's pretty good. There's some really good
Alabama, Georgia.
Yeah, that's a later game, right? 6:30.
Give me that schedule, man. That's slate.
Oregon,
so good.
Penn State, Alabama, Georgia.
What would it take for Kansas to get ranked? They got to win 2 more in a row, 3 more in a row.
If they win this weekend, I think they're in.
Well, think about it. USC and Illinois, one of those teams is 21-23. One of them is losing. So you would think whoever loses probably gets knocked out of the top 25.
Last week?
They play Cincinnati, sure, who also only has one loss. And I think the fact that Kansas got a lot of votes in this most recent poll. So I would say if Kansas wins, especially if they win 41-10 or similar like they did last weekend, then Kansas is definitely in. Plus, the more Missouri win, the better it helps Kansas at least a little bit. Even though Kansas lost the game, it still is the one loss that they have is to an opponent who is continuing to win games. Missouri winning helps Kansas out a little bit too.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I've said before like that, both for Missouri and Kansas. They should both hope the other keeps winning because it's going to only strengthen the resume for either. It's still a long, 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 long shot that Kansas will get to the college football playoff. Missouri right now, according to ESPN's metric, their FPI metric, they have the 12th best odds. They have a better odds to make the college football playoff, according to their numbers, than anyone in the Big 12 does. And we know one of the teams in the Big 12 has to go. So it's like, they're saying Missouri's got a better chance to make the college football playoff than anyone currently in the Big 12 does. That probably speaks a little bit to the Big 12 versus the SEC, but still of note, at least that would be the case. There are a lot of good matches.
No, it's a good weekend. It's a good weekend for college football. Absolutely it is.
I like the standalone night one, so I guess catch me for that Penn State-Oregon one, you know? Sometimes in the middle of the day on Saturdays, I got to do stuff.
You got kids. Different activities.
My kid goes to tennis on Saturday morning, and then my daughter goes to dance. Although at tennis, it's all just like lesson work. He's like, I want to go versus someone. Like he's ready, I got the game. Put me on the other side of the net against somebody. I'm ready to play.
He doesn't like to practice. He just wants to play.
Kid wants a match. I said, we can go to a court. We'll play
versus. Is Josh Klingler teaching your kid tennis?
He's not, but we also don't live in similar parts of the
city.
That's
true. Yeah, that'd be
otherwise, I would have Kling do it. Why not?
I think you should have Kling give him a lesson.
A lesson in verses. I got a verses for you. You ready? And they just have Kling like really serve one over the net.
That would be pretty funny.
We play against each other in ping pong, where he's starting to learn the rules before tennis lessons.
Ping pong's one. I've never been like ping pong. I've always stunk. I can't play ping pong at all.
I love playing ping pong. I'm not claiming I'm the world's greatest ping pong player.
I've never been into ping pong. That's one of those like I've always wanted to be able to, but nah, can't do it. And then you watch the Olympics, and you're like, you got to be kidding me.
Oh, well, I can't play ping pong like that. But I like, you know, if it's like 40 of us just randomly stepping into a bar, I'm guessing I'm one of the like 12 best.
Oh, okay.
Like I think I'm a viable ping pong player.
I'm 39 or 40.
Drew and I played once and I beat him, but it was also on like not a regulation table.
Is this true?
We played on the conference.
I love how Cody remembered it. Remembers this.
Well, we were talking about
instance.
The thing. We played. Yeah, yeah. We played on the back conference room table.
Yeah.
On like
yeah,
the.
I don't remember
not
what
a real
I said.
Ping
not
pong.
A regulation table.
I don't remember what. I'm not very good at ping pong. Like I don't claim to be good at ping pong either.
All right, up next, Danan Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver. He'll be on the broadcast this Sunday. He'll stop by. We'll talk to him about Xavier Worthy being a full participant. what to look for against the Ravens. That's coming up here on Cody and Gold.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.